Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
This week with Health Minister and Lee Coordination Minister for the Christchurch Attack Royal Commission, Andrew Little, I asked about ACC not extending its coverage to include those who weren't physically injured on March 15 and the Like Minds Mental Health Programme rebranding. But following from Louis's interview with the New Zealand Nurses Organisation, I began by asking about the fresh nurses' strikes, which would see them walking off the job for 24 hours on July 29th over better pay, while other strikes are planned for August 19 and September 9. Told other outlets and to us at the last nurses' strike that reaching a pay equity settlement is the forefront issue these negotiations. So what is the holdup?
Look, it's a good question because agreement was reached with the nurses and the DSBs and the Minister of Health 3 years ago to do the pay equity exercise. It is a difficult exercise. It is quite technical. You got to look at the various skills and responsibilities of the various nurse positions covered by the collective agreement at the moment. Then you've got to find the right comparators, and then you've got to work out what it means in terms of lift in remuneration. So it has taken a while to do that. Anyway, because of the bargaining over the renewing the collective agreement at the moment has been so drawn out, and it is very clear that actually what the nurses' organisation wants is something close to the pay equity result being achieved through that. I have said to officials a few weeks ago, let's now just accelerate that work. So they've been doing that work. We are close, as I understand it, to being able to quantify what the comparator exercise actually means in terms of dollars and people's remuneration. So hopefully we'll have something to put to nurses in the not-too-distant future. But the reality is, nurses know their pay has been the product of discrimination for decades, for generations, and it is about time to make that lift, and that's what we are trying to achieve.
Well, how much can the DHBs or the governments can afford to offer the nurses?
Well, I think it's a question about accepting the integrity of the pay equity exercise, and that will lead to, we expect it will lead to a lift in remuneration. We need to know what the technical exercise gets to, and there's a bit of a negotiation around that. So I can say that the government is prepared. We know this has been coming. We signed up to it 3 years ago, and we have to kind of accept the process and make sure the process has integrity. So we expect there will be a lift. I mean, the government will have to fund it. The DHBs, they have their routine funding, but even the most recent budget didn't provide for a significant pay increase for nurses because we have a separate budget item for that. So, well, not a budget item, it's a contingency that we've held for some time pending resolution of the pay equity claim. We now need to resolve the claim.
Well, the DHBs are going to have two more mediations with the nurses in the coming weeks before July 29th. Are you confident that it could be resolved before a strike could even take place?
Yeah, well, they had mediation last week, and the reports I had is that the engagement was very constructive. There's been sort of informal discussions this week. There'll be another formal mediation next week. Providing everybody is focused on trying to get the best result and the right result, then I'm confident that there is a way through this. And I think, nurses don't take strike action, easily. It's not something I don't think nurses want to do. They want to get on with their job. They want to feel that they are being fairly rewarded for what they do. There are other issues too. I mean, there is workforce issues. We know there's a large number of nurse vacancies, which means a lot of nurses at the moment are doing extra shifts, doing more overtime, and are under pressure. There's more patients turning up, as typically happens in wintertime. So, look, we've got to address those workforce issues as well. And the safe staffing agreement that we also signed up to 3 years ago has had a fairly variable sort of implementation across the DHB. Some have done it, and as I understand it, they've done it well. Others, not so much. Others are nowhere near complete. So I think we need to just get to the bottom of why that program of work still hasn't been concluded yet and get that done so that nurses have some confidence that when they're at work, they're going to have the right number of colleagues working with them to meet the demand that they're faced with at the time.
Okay, but do you think the negotiations will be less drawn out if your health sector reform is already in place?
Well, I think the benefit of the health sector reform is that we're then only dealing with one employer. It would be Health NZ, it would be the employer of all the workers in the public health service. So one employer, one agreement, and I think a little bit easier in terms of corporate leadership, if I could use that term, in terms of engaging with the unions who we're negotiating with. So, and I think also larger organisation, a bit more oomph and resources behind the engagement with the unions. So I think that, you know, we can engage, I think, more constructively over a longer period of time.
Okay. Moving on to my second topic of this week, it's about Cabinet deciding against extending ACC coverage to cover those victims who are not physically injured on the March 15 attacks. So why did Cabinet decide this?
Because we thought it's quite a significant change to ACC, even though, you know, some people have said, well, you could do a one-off. Actually, the way we've, and successive governments have managed ACC policy is we don't typically do kind of one-offs or exceptions for classes of people. And the argument about compensation for or coverage for mental health, or not mental, sort of mental harm caused by trauma or tragedy is one we have occasionally. And many of us think there is a case to say, well, mental harm is no different to physical injury. It can be incapacitating, and it does mean that, you know, you need help and sometimes need quite serious treatment. But we thought there's many others who have traumatic experiences. You know, you think about victims of motor vehicle accidents who aren't necessarily physically injured, but who witness what happens and the aftermath and the injuries inflicted on other people, and we thought that if we're going to make this decision, we should make it in the way we do with ACC decisions ordinarily, which is that it should have universal application. And in order to do that, we do need to have a good hard think about how far this would go, what the implications would be, how many people might qualify in any one year, and then what it means for levies, you know, bearing in mind that ACC is paid for from levies on by workers and employers as well as the government. So we thought it was too big a question just to deal with in the aftermath of a single incident. And, I mean, we didn't stop there. What we also made sure was that what people were wanting in terms of support and help in the aftermath of that accident, particularly psychosocial help after that incident, that was in place. And that was in place, and it continues to be in place. And although there have been some claims in the last sort of year or so that actually a lot of the help and support that was put in place in 2019 has withered away, it's for that reason that we've set up what we call the Collective Impact Board in Christchurch. So it's a board with all the relevant government agencies on, including ACC, plus representatives of families of victims, plus the wider Muslim community. And they meet on a regular basis to make sure that those who are still needing support are getting the support that they need.
Right, but in general, do you think ACC itself should be reformed to expand coverage to cover mental those who are harmed mentally as well?
I can only ever express the government view, which is that it's something that we should consider. I mean, when you look at the original design or intentions of ACC, it was intended to cover not just physical injury, but things like strokes, heart attacks, and those sorts of things, things that can stop people working and therefore deprive them of an income. And we now know that mental trauma can do the same thing. At some point as a country, we are going to have a debate about how far we want ACC to run, bearing in mind that as we increase its cover for more conditions, then levies will go up as well. But we should have that debate, because I think people realise now that there are things other than just purely physical injury that can be debilitating and prevent you from working.
Okay, moving to my final topic for this week. Now, you have announced recently that the Like Mind program has been rephased. So what is this? So what's happening on this?
Yeah, so the Like Minds Like Mind campaign started in the late 1990s, and it was in response to a growing suicide rate and therefore, you know, issues about mental health. And really it was about trying to destigmatize mental health issues and mental unwellness, so that people could talk about it, and if they were feeling depressed or anxious and really needed help, that they felt okay about asking, reaching out for it and getting it. And so we ran that kind of social messaging campaign for quite a while. It sort of tapered off. It's been recast now. We now call it Nuku Te Ao, Like Minds, so Step Into My World. And and bearing in mind that particularly when it comes to suicide, there's a higher incidence amongst particularly young Māori men. So we do want it aligned with, or more explicitly aligned with Māori values and Māori messaging to reach that community. So again, it's about destigmatizing mental health issues and the idea that, you know, if you're feeling mentally unwell, that you're not subject to discrimination for disclosing that and for reaching out and getting help about it. We do have some major mental health challenges in our communities, and we do need to deal with that, and we need to be able to talk, and people need to be comfortable about talking about those sorts of issues. So this is about trying to create that space for people to do that.
That was Labor MP Andrew Little. The Wire.